Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the show that I promise you, is better than watching the presidential debate. Oh my god! what a mess!
Burn. Yeah.
Look, Alex, I've got to come clean to you. I did not watch it live because I was too tired and had to go to bed.
Couldn't handle it. Yeah,
but I watched 90 seconds of highlights and wanted to gouge my eyes out. It was that bad.
What a mess.
It's not a debate. It was not a debate.
And now we've just given you an indication of when we recorded the podcast. So there you go. It was several days ago. How are you both? How are you, Robin? How are you doing?
Oh, I am well. Thank you, Alex. It's been an exhausting year. Sometimes it feels like.
This last week has been an exhausting since we last spoke. Yeah,
good to be back. How are you doing?
I'm all right, yeah. Just getting through this week, month, year. How about you, Martin? You all right? You okay?
Yeah, I don't know what to say anymore. It's been, as you guys have already said, it's been a long year. But I've gone back to playing the 2005 original God of War PlayStation 2 game, and that's cheered me right up. Going around slaying everyone, it's been good fun. So that's been my escape this week. Yeah,
so something a bit cathartic about going around killing gods.
Oh, I needed to. I needed it this week. I desperately needed it.
Nice,
but yeah, it's been okay. It's been okay.
It's been interesting so far. Hearing what we've been saying, it's been a long week, a long year, a long decade. It's very focused on time. Can you feel a segue coming?
This is good. This is good.
Nice.
And that very much links to what we're going to be talking about today. Because even though 2020 has been absolutely terrible, what if I could tell you that this isn't 2020?
What?
And that we're actually living in 17... something in the 1700s.
The specifics
range.
Don't matter.
So I'm going to be talking about that a little bit later. But before we jump into the main topic of this
can't
week,
just say that, Alex. That was too casual. Moving on from that. What is this?
I'll clear things up. It's the phantom time hypothesis. Does that clear things up?
That helps me. That helps me. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
It all makes sense now.
We'll be talking about that a little bit later. But before then, I just wanted to thank our amazing Patreon supporters who are supporting us through thick and thin. And we love each and every one of you. Thank you. You are the lifeblood of this channel. But in particular, we'd like to thank our top tier members who are just incredible people. So Peaswad, thank you, Peaswad, for all of your support. Emmett Tapia, thank you. Hayden Smith. Herb Brown, who's new, I think, Herb Brown.
Yeah,
so welcome. Yes. Welcome to the club. Hope you stick around. Thank you for your support. Josh Chomatek, Liam Mullen, and Sir Chris McCrite. Thank you, all of you, so much for all of your support. What have you both learned this week? Let's go with Martin, shall we?
Oh, Thanks, Alex. Well, my story is about Amazon, and in particular, a payment method that Amazon are going to be rolling out soon. So this particular payment method is called Amazon One, and is a scanner that registers a user's palm. What? Intrigued?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So what happens is that it basically identifies the veins under your hand in your palm.
Whoa.
And then registers this to the particular user. So you can pay for things with the swipe of your hand in a very Jedi-like way.
Oh, you don't even have to like rest your hand on a scanning pad or something.
No.
You just wave.
No. I mean, I imagine that this technology has been going around for quite some time before the pandemic. But what a better marketing pitch than saying you don't have to touch anything.
That's cool.
So where is this? Is this just being used? Where is this being used on?
So it isn't actually out yet. Amazon are going to employ it in some of their physical stores in Seattle shortly. A date hasn't been announced, but pretty soon, because Amazon apparently do have physical stores. And then they're hoping to kind of to make it more widespread in other stores around the US and then eventually around the globe.
Incredible.
So you just go in. I'm trying to work this out. You go in,
mm-hmm.
and you just wave at a screen at what you want, and it buys it.
Yeah.
You put your hand over the scanner, and then what it does is it basically identifies the patterns in the veins of your hand, and from that it can then basically say, you know, this is who you are, and you can pay for your items. So you link up to your cards, your credit cards, and it's just a much more supposedly a more secure way of doing this.
I don't know, it sounds really flawed. All you need to do is chop someone's hand off and
exactly
you're
Minority Report style. Get the eyes. Yeah,
I guess I That's mean cool. I guess it is more secure, but is it a bit like overkill? I don't know, what's the I guess
it's
people
the future.
Do steal.
It's cool.
The idea is that there were a lot of concerns, weren't there, about facial recognition and the privacy based on that, because you can see someone's face and you can identify them, well, based on this. So they basically have the data of who you are based on your face. Whereas this, you can't identify someone directly based on the veins in their hands. It just goes directly to the payment method, which is then encrypted and secure.
Okay.
So apparently it's a much more secure way of doing things. Of course, like some groups have come out and said, this is pointless. We don't need it. It's another way of getting data about us, about users, about individuals. But for me, I see it as if it's a way of, you know, being able to pay for something that's a lot more secure than facial recognition, which was trying to be rolled out over the last decade or so, then surely it only has to be a good thing. It's the way we're going, isn't it? Of going away from any kind of physical way of paying. I mean, cash is gone and credit card fraud is rife. So it seems to me like it could be a good option.
Yeah, I'm struggling to imagine a way that criminals could get around this system to fake someone else's palm print.
Yeah, like there've been cases with the contactless where people have been scammed, haven't there?
Exactly.
So,
whenever big businesses or governments try and implement something, like you say, like with facial recognition, immediately I'm thinking like, oh, they're just going to sell my face to the government or whatever. I can understand why people would be hesitant to give that. It's your personal information, technically, I guess. Whereas this, I don't even understand what that means in that kind of conspiracy sense. What would they do with my veins? Why would they want that? I'm sure they would, but why?
I mean, would they clone you? Take the hand.
Why do they want my vein information?
It'll all make sense when you start getting adverts on Facebook for fat reduction surgery on your capillaries or something. Yeah.
What are you trying to say?
Yeah.
There is the obvious issue that if you don't have any arms, you're kind of screwed, aren't you? When I read this, nothing stood out to me as being like an issue for me. I was like, if they can't trace you, they can't track you from it, it's more secure, I don't have an issue. But it still feels weirdly invasive because it's part of you, it's part of your body that they're tracking for you to make a payment. It's such a cold transaction based on a part of you that's so unique. And I think that's what's weird about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those things people will just get used to, though.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
they'll realize how convenient it is when they don't even need to leave the house with their wallets or money anymore. They just bring their hand, as long as they've got their hand with them. They're fine.
Yeah, yeah. The wallet industry is going to crash and burn.
Anyway, well, thank you, Martin, for bringing that. I hadn't heard about that story, but that was incredibly fascinating. I feel like there's a whole podcast in there, maybe. But Robin, let's see if we can top that.
I'm afraid I definitely can't. In fact, mine's a really lame follow-up to a story that I mentioned this week. I learned a couple of months ago, and I've talked about it, and I know you're excited for it. Justice League, the Snyder Cut, out on HBO Max next year. We are not being sponsored, sadly. But I'm on the record, I think, on this podcast as saying that I don't think Zack Snyder makes particularly good films. But I'm still excited to see the Justice League Snyder Cut. But what was amazing is that the theatrical cut came out in 2017. It was a massive flop. It was also a terrible, terribly received film. But it was not finished by Zack Snyder, the director. It was finished by Joss Whedon, because Zack Snyder had to step away for personal reasons. And it was rushed, and Joss Whedon did loads of reshoots, and it was a really weird, terrible film. And then ever since 2017, fans have been campaigning to get the Snyder Cut released, and finally they announced this year that the Snyder Cut is going to be released on HBO Max, the streaming service, next year, 2021. Mm-hmm. And at the time when they announced it, they said it's going to be 4 hours long, and it's not finished yet. Zack Snyder needs up to $30 million to finish the visual effects, because it was a very CGI-heavy film. Okay. And then now they've announced that, despite COVID, there are going to be reshoots. And Zack Snyder is bringing back Henry Cavill, Gal Gadot, and Ben Affleck as Batman. We all thought he'd quit, but no, he's coming back for reshoots. And apparently the budget to finish the film has now gone up to $70 million.
What?
Which is, I know, right?
To finish the Justice League film.
Mm-hmm. Why would you do this?
At best, it's going to be a passable film.
the dead horse has run away. You flogged it so much. There's nothing left.
It's incredible. I just think it's amazing that the studio is putting this much money behind it. They've made other superhero movies for less money than that. And
I'm... Yeah, that's staggering, because surely it's not exactly like we're in a position for it to be re-released in the cinema, even.
No, it's
straight to DVD.
I'm so fascinated. Like something. What do you think? Like, something else is going on, right? It can't just be that they think they're going to get $70 million worth of subscribers from this one thing.
I mean, genuinely, the only thought that I have for why they're justifying this is that Zack Snyder has shown them what he's worked on so far. And or like shown them what he wants to do and explained it, and it sounds incredible. Like it has to be like a real game changer in terms of superhero films or something. It has to be amazing. It has to be, right? It has to be. They've bigged it up so much.
I mean, maybe, just maybe, if they know it, or they're 90%, 99% sure that it's going to be at least a good film, it will bring back a little bit of reputation to the DCU, which has suffered, let's say, over the past few years. So maybe they see it as an investment in the DCU as opposed to a short-term investment in subscribers or a return on what they're putting in. Mm. That's the only thing I can think of, because this just, it doesn't make sense. Either that or Zack Snyder's like, I'm never going to work with you ever again if you if you don't let me do this.
It's all about who you know. Maybe that Zack Snyder's just a really persuasive person and... the executives love him. Who knows? I think you're probably... I'm leaning towards you, Martin. I think they've got other plans for the DC movies, and maybe... Although this is what worries me, just briefly to summarise the story. I was looking forward to the Zack Snyder version of Justice League that he intended to release in 2017. And I'm worried now that the studio is like, oh, we've got big plans for our DC universe going forward. Zack, do you think you could make some changes to the movie to make it fit in with these big plans? Then it becomes a lie and another studio product of like, this is the movie the executives want, and Zack Snyder's Justice League is still out of reach.
it's a feeder film for other,
well, for, oh, that'd be a shame. For you once, shame on you. For me twice, shame on me.
Never
You'll only have yourself to blame if it's terrible.
Yeah, I know. I'll be there front line. I'll be subscribing to the free trial of HBO Max as soon as it's available. So what did you learn this week, Alex?
Yeah, so I learned this week that in Nepal there's a festival which dedicates a day solely to dogs, to thank dogs for being dogs. Kukur Tihar translates, is the name of the festival, and that translates to worship of the dogs. Oh. And it involves a full day of celebrating and pampering dogs for their loyalty and friendship to humans. Everything going on wrong in the world, just know that on one day a year, dogs get their fair share in Nepal.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. They deserve it. They deserve it. And it should be spread out across the world. It should become a national holiday everywhere.
Honestly, you should see some of these pictures though of these dogs. They've like got like flowers around their necks. They've got like, you know, markings on them. It's like they're being worshipped. It's great.
Oh,
that's awesome. We should have more celebration of our animals. Animals are one of the only things that are keeping people sane at this time.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, generally, particularly in the West, we could do with some more organized appreciation of nature. You know, Tree Day or... I mean, it probably exists.
Why not?
There probably is a National Dog Day and just nobody cares.
yes, true. Yeah.
There is a National Everything Day, isn't there? Yeah.
There is, and they double up. A lot of them double up, which probably has some pretty hilarious combinations if you actually look at the calendar.
I'm going to make a National Alex and Martin Day to appreciate the two of you and all the things that you do for the world.
Just exclusively, like me, Alex, and Martin.
Oh, yeah, you two, yeah. I didn't say your full names in case, for privacy reasons, because, I mean,
it's borderline cultish there, I think, Robin.
I'm
okay with. I'm okay with that.
Do you want me to turn the camera around? I can show you the shrine if you want to see it. Yeah. Next to the shrine to Chris McCrae in the corner.
It's also incredibly niche. I can't imagine that catching on as a national holiday, but... I'm excited for you to try, Robin, quite frankly. Give it your best shot.
All right.
I like it. We'll make posters. And the poster will say, like Jim Jones, but without the Kool-Aid. So maybe we'll go with that.
Just the shotguns, that's all.
Yeah, shotguns and Dick Turpin.
Very good. That's the new band name.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for letting me know, giving me an insight into what you've been looking at this week. Always enlightening, a little bit disturbing, but always enlightening. So thank you, fellas. What comments have we seen this week? What are the standout favorites? Well, I've got a comment from Codeplay Gameplay, and this was on our podcast last week where we discussed some myths surrounding the dark web. Mm-hmm. One of those myths that we talked about was red rooms.
Yeah.
This creepy idea that somewhere in the deep corners of the internet, there are these chat rooms where people basically get tortured or murdered, and it's broadcast live to a chat room of people who can then instruct whoever's doing the torturing what they want to happen. And Codeplay Gameplay says, I don't want to sound suspicious, but the amount of people that go missing, disappearing, it could be possible for the red rooms to exist. Probably not live streams, but more like a one-on-one stream. Same thing with the theory of the government kidnapping people to feed lizard people / aliens. making humans into cattle, basically. And he says that it's scary that people can come up with ideas like this that makes you question about the people that actually have money to go fund things like this. And that is what's scary, isn't it? Like when... Because this came out from a film, wasn't it, originally? The idea of red rooms. I can't remember what it was called.
You mentioned Videodrome,
Yeah, that's the one. And it makes you wonder, like, if someone came up with that as an idea, maybe this actually does exist somewhere.
I mean, live streams of horrendous things, including some of the things that are purported to happen in red rooms, have happened on the kind of the surface web, haven't they, in the past? It's just, what we were discussing is whether there are these red rooms that kind of exist almost ongoing, that aren't really isolated events, but are kind of consistently showing these acts for people that want to pay for it. I mean, there have been issues, as we spoke about there not being enough bandwidth to be able to stream. And it was being far too slow, basically, to be able to live stream these kind of things. But in terms of this happening, I think it probably does happen, but maybe not to do with feeding lizard people and aliens.
Less to do with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
When it got to that bit, I was like, okay, interesting, but maybe I'm not sure I'm on board with the lizard and the aliens.
Yeah. It's an interesting theory, though, and it's a spooky one as well.
It is.
Right, what comments have you had?
Well, I've got a lovely comment from David Martins, and when I read this comment, I wasn't actually having a very good day, so it really cheered me up. Oh. And David says, "Hey guys, been a dedicated subber since the other podcast, / YouTube channel. So happy to see the current channel is gaining more traction on YouTube. I always recommend the Just Interesting podcast when other podcasts are discussed. Disgust, I want to say disgusts. Disgust. I work 6 10-hour days a week, and your content is a great way to learn a few new topics to bring up at work. Thanks, my boys. Cheers. From Winnipeg, Manitoba in Canada." So thank you, David. That brightened up my day. And even if we're able to brighten up an hour of one of your working days, then that's awesome.
Oh,
so
thanks, Dave.
Glad you enjoy it, and cheers.
That is one of the nicest comments ever that we've received. Glad that we can offer some kind of help with your very long weeks, very long days.
Yeah.
Hard work.
Yeah.
Living up to the Canadian stereotype, though. I mean, letting the nation down. You're just too nice, David. My comment is nowhere near that nice, and I think I know what you two will, how you'll react to this, but Beth Dumont commented on last week's podcast, I think in response to the comments, and she's got an interesting fact, and she says that castration, for those who don't know, is the removal of the testes. No testes, no hormones get released. Chemical castration does the same thing using medication.
Why are you doing this?
Well, it's an interesting thing. I didn't know. So the reason I bring this up is because it made me look up the difference between chemical castration and actual castration, or traditional surgical castration, I should say.
Okay.
And I think, I just want to say, I think Beth's on the right lines, but I think there's a little nuance missing there. Because obviously, if you surgically castrate someone, you remove the testes and or the penis, so you're removing the means by which sex can occur, but it does have an effect on the sex drive because testosterone is not being produced, and chemical castration is hormonal treatment that suppresses the production of testosterone, which apparently drives is the main motivator of the sex drive. So
Robin, I just want to interject and say this is that you've spoken confidently about this now in the most confident way I think I've seen you speak about any topic ever.
Are you now a professional castrator?
It's the only way to survive in 2020, guys. It's the only way to survive.
It's the times hit Robin hard.
I recommend, but not as hard.
But yeah, not as hard as he hit the balls.
Oh dear. That's an unreliable way to castrate people, Martin. You should know that.
Yeah, just hitting them.
So thank you, Beth.
With a knife.
For prompting that little round of education. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Beth.
Very good. Thanks. Very good. Thanks. Can people stop with the castration comments? Because it only encourages him.
Yes, please. I sympathise. I'm sorry, guys. So please comment below about whether or not we should talk about castration in future.
On that note, then, I guess.
Segue.
Shall we talk about the phantom time hypothesis?
Ooh, yeah. Let's.
Cool.
What is the phantom time hypothesis, Alex?
So, with the world, you know, focusing on fake news and how it's hard in modern society to decide what's right and what's wrong, what's real and what's fake. But the one thing that we thought we could rely on at the very least was that the date was right. The date was accurate. Yeah. And this is 2020. Well, I'm sorry to say, Robin and Martin, that was just fake news this whole time. It's not actually 2020. It's actually 1723. That's right. We are actually living 297 years in the past. That is, of course, according to one man. Well, multiple people now, because it's attracted quite a lot of followers, has the Phantom Time hypothesis. but a historian called is a German historian called Heribert Illig. He, according to him, the year is actually 1720. The Gregorian calendar is a lie, and a chunk of the Middle Ages was completely made up.
Oh, right, yeah, that, wow, okay. So it's not just that the calendar is inaccurate, it's that history has been falsified to fill the gap.
This hasn't been a mistake. This hasn't been, yeah, something that happened by accident or people have calculated it wrong or anything. This was a conspiracy that was cocked up in the Middle Ages, and it was intentional. It was intentional to do this. And yeah, so this theory he came up with, and he presented it in 1991, calling it the Phantom Time Hypothesis. And he says that this conspiracy dates back to 1000 AD and involves multiple of the rulers in the world at that time period. He claims that Pope Sylvester II, Holy Roman Emperor Otto III, and the Byzantine Emperor Constantine VII all got together and conspired to change the calendar to make it seem as if Otto had begun his reign in the millennial year of 1000 AD.
Right, okay.
And he says that the reasons why is that 1000 sounded a lot more meaningful than 996.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And then after this, the three basically altered existing documents, created fraudulent historical events and people in order to back themselves up. He also makes the extraordinary claim that, Charlemagne, Holy Roman Emperor Charlemagne, mm-hmm. pretty yeah. famous guy.
Mm-hmm.
He claims that he wasn't even real. So when Illig was searching for proof of this theory, he basically focused on Pope Gregory XIII, who introduced the Gregorian calendar in 1582. And this is still the main calendar used today to conduct business throughout the world. And the problem with the Julian calendar, which had been in effect before the Gregorian calendar and had been in use since the Roman times, was that this overestimated the length of an average year by about 11 minutes. And even though that doesn't sound like much, it would have added up to a drift of about 13 days between when the calendar came into effect and the year 1582.
Okay.
But instead of shortening the days by 13, shortening the calendar by 13 days, Pope Gregory only adjusted it by 10 days. And this Illig cites as proof that the church was aware of this issue and used this to fabricate this 297-year stretch of time between 614 and the year 911.
So in effect, this then means that everything within that time period has been made up.
Basically, yes. Everything was fabricated and made up. But why, you're asking? Why would the church do this? What's their motivation? And basically, like I said earlier, these three world leaders, Pope Sylvester II, Otto III, and Constantine VII, they basically thought it would be cool if they ruled in the year 1000 instead of the boring year of 703.
Wow.
Okay, so that's the basis.
So they set their minions to fabricate an entire three-century stretch of time that never actually happened. So Charlemagne never existed. Alfred the Great never existed.
The Vikings didn't happen.
A lot of the Vikings never happened. according to Illig, Catholic historians invented all these characters in order to pad out history so that the Pope and those two emperors could flatter themselves by claiming to have ruled during the year 1000. And as further evidence, these three centuries were fabricated. Illig points out that there seemed to be no buildings constructed in Constantinople during this time period. And it's also kind of like a period where, well, they claim, comparatively compared to the centuries leading up to this time period and afterwards, seems like nothing really happened. Nothing majorly happened. but except for Charlemagne, well, Alfred the Great,
yeah,
and
define
as you
huge, like, what, the Vikings. What do they mean by that? That's
yeah.
Oh, I mean, some people, we celebrated the second millennium by building the Millennium Dome in London. They celebrated the first millennium by inventing 300 years of history. I mean, potato, potato, tomato, tomato. that's all it is. I mean, the first millennium was a major event. There was, as you might expect, similar to the second millennium, there was huge panic and concern because, in Europe at least, because, of course, the first millennium was measured from supposedly the date of Christ's birth. So in the Christian world, there was huge significance put on the first millennium and a very, very profound fear that the world was going to end. Mm. And it's funny, you read texts from the time, and although you have to translate it because they weren't speaking the same language that we speak now, you look at it and you think, oh, they're saying exactly the same kind of thing that people were saying, well, are saying now, you know, fearful for the future and fearful for society and the breakdown of old-fashioned values and stuff like that. So I can understand, like, if people don't quite understand why the first millennium would have been a significant date to the three people supposedly who created these 297 years of history, that's why. It was a really big event for the Christian calendar. However, it's time to reveal a bit of personal history. I studied the early medieval period at university. It was what I did my degree in. I can pretty decisively confirm that happened.
How did I not know this? So you're personally offended
by this?
I'm
personally offended,
Robert,
by this. Yeah. this happened. I mean, so one of the things that Herbert Illig says is that there isn't much kind of tactile archaeological evidence for this period in history, or what was insultingly commonly called the Dark Ages, but is better and more accurately called the early medieval period. And he's kind of right. Like, historians rely a lot on documents, on the written word, on people's accounts of what happened. Unfortunately, he overlooks the fact that in order to write things, you need implements, ink and paper, or the equivalent of paper, vellum or parchment, to write upon. So even if there is not a big stone building from that era, because people mostly built in wood in that time, or even if there aren't many graves surviving from that period with lots of juicy artifacts that can be carbon dated and other means of dating, there's still a lot of written evidence written on stuff that is from this mysterious 297 years that can be accurately radiocarbon dated to that period. And even then, like I just mentioned, graves, there are enough graves of people who lived and died in this era to prove that this era happened.
So you're attributing that lack of proof as it basically them not having pens and paper as much to write it down. That's why there's less. There still is, but there's less historical records.
And no, the opposite. I'm saying that so the Dark Ages refers to an era of history post-Roman. So pretty much the Roman Empire ended, and along with the decline of the Roman Empire, what is commonly called the Dark Ages began at different points in history in different nations or across Europe. And what that amounted to was a loss of Roman authority and a loss of Roman knowledge. So people stopped building stone colosseums. They started building wooden halls, and wood obviously rots. And particularly in Europe, Northern Europe especially, the climate doesn't preserve things very well. So there is a lack of hard evidence for things. But there's a lot of paper. There's lots of people writing stuff down. Although, admittedly, mm-hmm. a lot of our documents were copied later. And there are things, for example, in Britain, we famously have 1066, the Norman invasion. One of the things William the Conqueror did to put his stamp on Britain was to go around destroying things. And in Wales, for example, there aren't many books surviving from before the year 1200 because the Normans literally went around and burnt all their books, like the Nazis in World War II. They just thought, right, we're going to destroy everything and impose Norman rule on Wales. And that kind of crap happens in the medieval period a lot. So we often rely on documents that have been copied down in later books. So there is some, there's truth to the claim that not much traditional archaeological evidence survives from what is called the Dark Ages, but there's still a lot of other evidence that survives, including books. Some books did make it, and including jewelry, and including swords and armor and people's bodies, you know, from the graves, and I think, some buildings.
Records of astronomy as well. I think that's one of the main ones that they use.
Mm-hmm.
Records from before this time, you know, were recorded, and the fact that, you know, after this time, when they were, you know, recorded again, that they line up, suggesting that the time in between certainly did exist.
Oh, that's great.
You know, there seems like there's no doubt that it didn't exist, because in terms of the solar eclipses in particular, the times, you know, before this period and after this period, yeah, it just suggests that there was a continuation of time and that there wasn't this gap, as they suggest.
Look, guys, it's an interesting idea, what you're suggesting. And I don't want to say, Robin, that what you studied at uni was all made up.
No, that's fine.
Obviously, I don't want to say that.
But waste of money.
don't you think it's just more believable that these three men basically invented the entire Charlemagne saga, as well as the entire Anglo-Saxon English historical records during this period,
yep,
the papal historical records, the Byzantine historical records, as well as Islamic and Chinese historical records.
Yeah,
but that's the thing, because it affects everything, doesn't it?
They must have forged everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
You can't just say, oh, Charlemagne didn't exist. If Charlemagne didn't exist, that has such a knock-on effect to all of these other bits of history around the world. They don't exist in isolation for one another. You've got to have cover stories for everything.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes difficult.
It's such a European-centric view of the world to say,
exactly,
yeah, this is what happened. Because, yeah, sure, the dating system we use originated in Europe, but, yeah, like, history was happening in other countries at the same time.
Yeah.
And like you say, Martin, especially with in the, like, Islamic and Chinese historical records, they record astronomical events such as like Halley's Comet and eclipses that perfectly align with when they would have happened. So on top of that, these world leaders would have had to have been astronomy experts as well, to accurately know when that was going to happen.
I mean, so not necessarily them. I mean, they're the rulers, right? So they would have had all the people at their command who knew this stuff. But again, the scale of the conspiracy, the scale of it, to falsify all these, not just thousands, but tens of hundreds of thousands of documents, documents that corroborate each other as well. It's not just one thing saying this is what happened, but somebody writing in England saying this is what happened, and somebody writing in France and in Germany, and maybe all the way over in Russia, or what was then Russia, you know, writing about the same thing, you know? And that's just this, how silly it is.
It definitely reminds me of people that on a different kind of note, but of Holocaust denial and people, and the amount of lengths that people would go to saying that, oh, everyone was involved in this cover up, and it's like, you're saying that people who were, yeah, it's just the scale of the cover up is so it would have to be so large and involve thousands, if not tens of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, that it's just not fathomable.
Yeah.
All of it, let's you know, take stock as well. All of it, just so they could say they ruled in the year 1000, just because it sounds cool.
Yeah.
It's a nice round number.
There are,
got to do what you got to do.
There are two things going for it, though, that I should admit. In that, although I agree entirely with both of you saying that it's just such a huge, massive conspiracy that it's unfeasible, it's not necessarily as implausible as the modern day person might think, because in medieval Europe, in early medieval Europe especially, literacy was the preserve of the church. So if you've got the Holy Roman Empire and the Byzantine Empire and Rome all on board, then it's ridiculous. It can't have happened, But it's possible that all written history for that period was instructed by this conspiracy, because it was all monks in churches or through and the monasteries church. Doing it. Yeah.
You might be 5% of the way there.
Yeah, you're getting there. You're getting there. The other thing is that there's one, the joy of being a historian. Anybody listening to this who studied history will know. And I think even, actually, no, Martin, you've had the same experience, I'm sure, doing politics. Different people write slightly different versions of the same events, and there are often discrepancies. And one of the great things about being a historian is that you get to be a detective and you get to figure out who's telling the closer truth to what actually happened. Who's got things slightly wrong, or who's twisting things slightly. And in the early medieval period, because there aren't that many records available compared to modern history, you often have to decide, okay, is this person's version of events true, or is this person's version of events true? And the phantom time hypothesis at least would go some way to explaining why some people come up with totally different versions of the same events to other people. However, it's complete nonsense.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing, Alex, I will say, I don't know if you get this, Martin, but every time you say, "Oh, we're actually living in 1723 or whatever," my brain immediately goes like, "Oh man, I'm wearing the wrong clothes. I should be wearing a big wig and ruffs or something."
Yeah. I like it. I prefer it. It's right now, it sounds preferable to 2020, to be honest.
2020 should have been a good year, you know, symmetrical number.
Yeah.
We're living in the future. We're living in 2020. Yeah. It still seems futuristic to me, but...
I've got a question for you both about the phantom time hypothesis.
Okay.
Okay. Ignoring for a moment the fact that we all fairly decisively came down on the side that it's not true. If it were true... would you want it to be true? Or would it not bother you at all?
Well, there's two questions here. Would I want to be living in the 1720s?
Mm.
Or would I want that history not to exist?
Ooh.
I would...
Because I don't care what year it is. Like, the date on the calendar doesn't matter to me. I wouldn't want that history to be erased and to be proven false, even though that would be quite exciting.
I would like the satisfaction of us finding it out and then mocking you, Robin, for studying something that didn't exist. But I don't think it would be worth it. I wouldn't like the thought that everything, it would just be like, so everything could be a lie. What's even true? 300 years was made up and no one even cared. So I think it would be pretty devastating to learn that it was true, actually. I hope it's not true.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it's not, and I think that's a good thing. That is a good thing, because then I think we'd start to question all sorts of historical events, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
If it happened then, could it have happened earlier in history? I mean, to be fair.
What did I even do this morning?
I mean, this thing is one of those great conspiracy theories, really, because how do you even prove it? He's got his mathematical premise, but you can't prove it. But equally, you can't disprove it because it's saying that the evidence is false.
Yeah, that get out clause.
Yeah,
as we see time and time again with these sorts of conspiracy theories. Yeah, but what do you guys think at home? Are you convinced by the phantom time hypothesis or any other conspiracy theories that involve erasing time? The mud flood one was a mad one. Spoke about ages ago. Do you remember that? That was even more mental. I don't even want to relive that. Anyway, do you guys fancy a quiz?
Yeah,
sounds good.
Welcome, gentlemen, to this week's quiz, which I will be hosting, your resident loser in the leaderboards. I'm bottom at the moment. I'm bottom of the table. I think I've got 3 wins and both of you have 4 or 4 and 5. I can't remember.
That is close, though. That is close.
It is close. But today is an exciting day because it's the battle for first place. One of you will be winning at the end of this quiz. So are you ready to find out who? You don't have a choice, actually. Okay, show me your buzzers. Martin, what have you gone for?
I've gone for my classic.
Let's be having you. Very nice. Good. Good stuff.
Good one. Thank you.
And Robin, what have you got?
I've gone for your old favourite, Alex. First time for me, possibly.
102, take one. With overlap, action, please. Very nice. Is that some Awesome?
It is. It's a lot slower than I remember.
It takes some practice.
102, it takes... take two.
There we go.
Take some practice, that buzzer. You've got to get the right timing.
Yes, yeah. That's so, Martin. You've got a home advantage already.
But I do like that buzzer, so I may favour yours. Oh, but then I do like the Delia one as well. So we'll
Delia
see.
Delia one is classic.
Well, as always, there's going to be 10 questions, general knowledge, and there's a little movie thing towards the end as well. Oh. This one. Question number one. What is the only animal with four forward-facing knees? Robin.
Is it the elephant?
It is the elephant. Mm,
of course, yeah. Well done. Nice.
How did you just know that, or have you heard?
Yeah, it's one of these few facts that I know about the natural kingdom.
One of the few. You had millions of options, and that was like one of the few that you knew. I know a lot about elephants' knees.
I don't know.
And ask me anything about castration, I know that as well.
It's be your mastermind topic.
Castration. Actually, you know, it's getting there. It's getting there. Just don't cut me off before the bell rings.
Oh, no pun intended. Nice.
Okay, question number two. What is the stiletto named after? You know, this type of shoe? I think I did hear Orson there first.
Yeah.
I believe it's a type of knife, an Italian knife.
It is. That is correct. It's a weapon, a type of, knife, dagger, stiletto. There you go.
Stiletto. Very,
very good. You've stormed into the lead in 2-0.
Sorry, yeah, Martin. Yeah.
It's all good. You'll get back.
Okay, question number three. What mountain group separates Europe from Asia?
Where are you? Oh, straight in there.
Martin.
Is it the Andes?
Not the Andes.
Why did I say the Andes?
I mean, you've got a second go, Martin, because I'm not entirely sure.
No. It's your chance now.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. The only mountain range I know is the Himalayas?
Yeah.
It is not the Himalayas.
There you go. That's in Nepal. That's too far east, right?
Asia from Europe. That's what you said, right?
Yep. Europe from Asia is actually what I said the other way around. But it doesn't matter.
Asia.
The Pyrenees is in France, so it's not them. Yeah. It's not the Alps, because they're also France and Italy. Mm.
It's just how far do they extend?
Robin.
Is it the Urals?
It is the Urals. What? It is but the Urals, I'm afraid.
Thank you. I only know them.
I thought they were in Russia, like as in they were just in Russia. I didn't know they extended out to
well, apparently they do.
We count in Russia as Europe.
I'm not an expert on
that weird space. I'm never quite sure
on mountain ranges.
Officially, Europe or not? Sometimes
this was just in the quiz.
Yeah. I was thinking that the only places it could be would be between like kind of Turkey kind of area, which I don't know any mountain ranges in Turkey.
No.
Or Russia, or like that out that way. After actually listening to the question and not being an idiot.
Well, that was my thinking. So I've got to admit it. Thank you, the board game Risk. It's got a region, the Urals, on it, I think. From childhood, I had some flashback, like, Russia, what's in Russia? I'm like, oh yeah, I always invaded that.
There you go. Okay, question number four.
Cool.
What was the Al in Al Capone short for?
Champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence.
Go on then, Robin.
Alphonse.
It was Alphonse, yeah. Alphonse Capone.
Nice.
This isn't going well, is it?
Could have been Alfredo.
It's not, I'm afraid, Martin, no. But you can still bring it back. You can still bring it back.
Thank goodness there's a movie round to come.
We're only four questions in. You can do this.
Oh, that's what I fear.
Okay. Question number five.
Okay.
Okay, you can do this, Martin. You can do this. This one you got. Sorry, I'll shut up. That's the worst thing to hear, I know. Which two dancers appear in the NATO alphabet? Which two dancers?
Oh, yeah. Lesbian Avenue! Foxtrot and Tango.
Very good. Very good. There you go. 4-1.
There you go. Got it.
It's not a donut. It's not a zero.
There you go. You can have one.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, question number six. Henry VIII was the first person to own a certain item of sportswear. What item of sportswear was it?
Wow, that's interesting.
Believe it or not. Yeah. Martin,
it's going to be a guess because it has to be.
Yeah.
An item of sportswear. It's going to be a... He was the first person to own it.
Yep. The first recorded historical figure to have these.
What?
Nikes.
Yeah. I reckon it's going to be something to do with hunting, isn't it? Well, hunting, I don't know, people are bows for ages, aren't they? Let's just go for it. A hunting bow.
It is not a hunting bow.
Like a sports, like an archery bow or something. Not hunting bow.
It's not a sports archery bow or any kind of bow.
Okay.
Yes, Robin.
Jockstrap?
It was not a jockstrap, no.
So I thought that too. Guess, though. I was like,
good guess.
It would be called like the How Harry or something, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So I give you a clue because it's quite broad.
Yeah.
I'll give you a little clue. This is just a little warm up clue in case we need a better clue down the line. But it's something modern. It's something that's used a lot today in this sport in question. It's something that's like you would think. It's a modern item. It's surprising, basically.
Okay.
I'm going to guess it's not a sports bra.
What about?
Lesbian Avenue! I mean, you're right. It's not a sports bra, but you need to be a bit more specific, I'm afraid.
What about, goalkeeping gloves?
It is not goalkeeping gloves.
A pair of goalie gloves. Every eight. Something that's quite modern.
Is it a sweatband?
It's not a sweatband, no.
Yeah, it's going to be some kind of piece of clothing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got to be, right?
So do I narrow you down a little bit?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, please.
I think, Martin, your recent suggestion was the closest so far.
Wait, what do you say?
Goalkeeping gloves was not like a million miles away.
What?
Yes, Robin.
Riding boots?
It's not riding boots.
Damn it.
What about, plain and simple, a football?
Just a football?
Yeah.
No, that is incorrect. Shall I give you a clue?
Okay, go on then.
Oh, Robin.
So I thought I should get a guess in before the clue.
Yes, yeah. Good idea.
Football boots.
Oh, Robin, you absolute fucker. No, yeah, you're right. It's football boots. How come you got an extra guess in there?
How is it goalie gloves and a football?
Yeah, and Robin said riding boots in between. I was just, you were circling it. You were circling that.
Sorry.
There we go. Did he have studs?
It's not known whether he had studs, but it was, I did look this up and he had like an itinerary of clothing, basically, that was recorded in his log, and he had specific boots for playing football, playing the beautiful game.
Cool.
So it was thought that maybe they were made from like hardened leather or that kind of thing, generally more expensive than his other shoes.
Or they might even have that distinctive shape that football boots have, where they really kind of rip.
Quite possibly.
Maybe.
That's cool. Sorry, I didn't mean to guess the correct answer there. I thought sometimes.
Good fact. Good fact. I like that one.
Yeah.
Great fact. Yeah.
Well, Martin, you can still bring it back. You just need every other question right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm afraid the movie questions are starting now.
Oh, God.
Okay, question number 7. Which movie role did The Rock especially want and was so annoyed it went to Tom Cruise?
Oh, my buzzer's just...
Oh, is that Martin?
It's Delia, actually.
Yeah.
Delia thinks that The Rock was annoyed that Tom Cruise got the role as Ethan Hunt in Mission Impossible.
It was not Ethan Hunt, no.
Damn.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking of just Tom Cruise's biggest roles now.
Yeah.
Ah, the French champagne. Yes, Robin.
A bit early for The Rock.
Jack Reacher.
It was Jack Reacher. Nice. Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Ethan Hunt's a bit early. When did Mission Impossible come out? Like 1996,
something like that? I think.
96? Yeah, The Rock was in. The Rock was in nappies then.
He was
At that point, it's kind of like, you didn't have a hope in getting that role, really, did you? It was understandable that they went with Tom Cruise. Jack Reacher, though, he's described as a big, big fella. Yeah, he's supposed to be massive. Tall, isn't he? I can kind of understand his annoyance. Why would they go with Tome Cruise?
I mean, that's too extreme stuff. Tome Cruise too small. The Rock possibly too big.
Yeah, true.
Because he's one of those guys that people are supposed to pick fights with Jack Reacher because he's tall, but he's not, like, he's a bit lanky. And I feel like, why would you pick a fight with The Rock? Why would you ever look at The Rock in a bar and think, I can take him?
It's just good point.
Also very true, yeah. So the next three questions are movie chapter headings. So I'm going to say these movie chapters, from the DVD box.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And you have to tell me what movie it has come from. Okay, don't sign. I mean, it's going to be fine. It's not that bad.
Okay.
Okay. Question number 8.
Okay.
Where's My Watch? Ezekiel 25:17. Bring out the gimp. Yes, Robin.
Oh, I feel bad now. Martin, do you want to guess?
That's not how the quiz works, Robin. Have your guess.
I'm happy to have Martin have a guess first.
No, it's cool. Go for it.
Pulp Fiction.
It is Pulp Fiction, yes. Yes.
It's a classic.
You're well done.
You happy now, Robin?
I've seen that film.
To be honest, no. I'll just not buzz.
I see. I thought it was going to be more obscure. I thought that makes sense because it's mentioned, isn't it?
These are fine. You know, they're fine. Question number 9.
Yeah.
Cooking with Colette, The Exterminator, The Restaurant Review.
I'll go for it, Robin. I don't know this one.
Is that Ratatouille?
It is Ratatouille. Cooking with Colette, The Exterminator, Rodent, The Restaurant Review. Yes.
I saw that film. When did it come out?
Like 2007, I think that came out.
I must have seen it about 2010, I think.
Wow.
And it's been on in the background, but I haven't paid it. Certainly, I haven't paid any attention to the DVD titles.
Okay, question number 10. Shit sandwich, sexist or sexy? It's One Louder, isn't it?
So I immediately thought Peep Show, but that's not a film.
There's definitely a joke in Peep Show about this.
No,
I mean, Jez from Peep Show basically embodies this film.
Just have a guess, Martin. Just stab it. Have a stab.
Shit sandwich, sexist or sexy? It's One Louder, isn't it?
So I gave you another clue for this one.
Go for it. Why not?
Let's turn it up to 11.
No, I'm tired. I can't think.
Do you know it, Robin?
This is Spinal Tap.
It is. This is Spinal Tap, yeah.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, I only saw it recently, actually.
But I have heard the quote, let's turn up to 11.
Yeah,
I've heard of that.
And rumour has it that's why the BBC iPlayer goes, the volume control goes up to 11.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Spinal Tap.
That's a good fact.
It's one louder. But you could just make 10 louder. Yeah, but It's one louder.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Very good.
Now, the album cover has been criticised. People are saying it's sexist. Yeah, well, that's the point, isn't it? Yeah, it's sexy. No, it's sexist.
Okay. Would you like the bonus question? And this is a closest wins.
Yeah.
Why not?
Okay. The Hollywood sign is an American cultural icon situated on Mount Lee in the Hollywood Hills. In That is incorrect. Yeah. In feet, how tall are the white capital letters?
Ooh.
Closest wins.
Ooh. In feet and inches.
Feet. Okay. And inches if you want. Yeah, sure. Go on then, Robin.
100 feet.
100 feet? Yeah. That's really tall, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness, they are quite big. Actually, you can see them from a long way, can't you? I'm not going to say they're that tall. I was thinking like 60 feet.
Is that your guess?
I was thinking 60, if that. Yeah, why not 60 would do?
Well, Martin is closer. It's 45 feet.
Oh,
they're 45 feet tall, which I thought that was massive. I thought that was much bigger than I thought. For some reason, I was imagining them like 10 feet tall or something, like just slightly bigger than a person.
Because there's no sense of scale, is there? Just there on a hill. Yeah.
That's it, yeah. They're just embedded in the hill, and no one really stands next to them because they're up in a hill.
Yeah. Anyway, there you go.
Cool.
45 feet. That's good.
Well, congratulations, Robin.
Yeah, well done. Convincing.
I hope you're happy. And sorry, Martin. I'm sorry for... Should have... Yeah, I feel bad.
Isn't it infuriating, Martin?
I'm not rising to it. I'm staying quiet.
But I mean it. I should have... I buzzed in too soon.
I'm going to meet you now. Goodbye. No, it was humbling. It was a humbling experience. And
No. Well, yeah,
it is what it is. It is what it is. You know, I'm not out of the game.
It's just one of those things.
I've lost the battle, but I haven't necessarily lost the war. It's getting that way, but I haven't necessarily lost the war yet.
No, it's still too close to call. There's still way more time.
Just own your victory, Robin. Stop being so humble.
There's hope. there's hope. It's fading, but there's hope. A bit like for the world.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, Robin. You are now back in the lead.
Good quiz. Thank you, Alex, for a good quiz.
You're very welcome. So, Martin, I think a couple more weeks of this, and then we'll call it season three and reset the scoreboard.
Exactly.
Again.
Yeah, if it carries on, he's beaten us very convincingly in the last couple of weeks, Robert, Alex. So we've got to work out something, haven't we? To try.
Let's end this before it gets too out of hand this time.
I'd like to thank my agent and my manager and a strict regime of egg whites and prayer.
Sorry, Robin. Hang on. You've got an agent and a manager, and your gig at the moment is this podcast.
they're a quiz agent and a quiz manager. That's all they do.
Fair enough. No. But let us know how you did at home, and if you were able to beat the mighty Robin. Yeah, thanks again for watching, you guys, and let us know what you thought about the Phantom Time Hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks again to everyone supporting us over on Patreon. You can find our latest Little More Interesting podcast over there, where we discuss politics and just the shit show that was last week, a few days ago, whenever this went out.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we need to mention? I think that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, just a huge thank you.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks again so much for watching, guys, and for supporting us. Hope you have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers.
Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.